Hey everyone, welcome to a sneak peek Ask Me Anything or AMA episode of the Drive podcast. I'm your host, Peter Attia. At the end of this short episode, I'll explain how you can access the AMA episodes in full, along with a ton of other membership benefits we've created. Or you can learn more now by going to peterattiamd.com/subscribe. So without further delay, here's today's sneak peek of the Ask Me Anything episode. Welcome to AMA number 44. I'm once again joined by Nick Stenson. In today's episode, we do something a little bit different. I recently had a DEXA scan and some blood work done, and I decided that we would go back and look at the past, 10 to 12 years of my DEXA scan results through a variety of changes that I've made, but specifically with respect to nutrition and exercise. So we focus really on how my nutrition and exercise has changed over the past 12 years and how that has impacted at least one metric for the purpose of this discussion, which is body composition. So as our subscribers, you have told us that you find great value in patient case studies, and we figured for this time, let's use Peter as the patient. So in this AMA, we go through my DEXA reports for the past 12 years or so, along with my most recent blood test, and we talk about all of the changes that have taken place. So when I went into ketosis for a prolonged period of time, came out of ketosis, spent a lot of time doing time-restricted feeding, spent a lot of time doing periodic prolonged fasts, high protein, low protein, all sorts of things. We also talk about the evolution of my training when I was primarily an endurance athlete versus now when I'm primarily strength training, but obviously still doing what I consider an appropriate amount of endurance training. So while this is a bit of a different episode, my hope is that you'll find a lot of insight in here because even though we're using me as a case study, a lot of what I talk about is, I believe, applicable to all of you because I know it's applicable to all of my patients. And these are the types of discussions that I have with my patients every day as we review their DEXA scans and, of course, their blood work. Now, if you're a subscriber and you want to watch the full video of this podcast, which is actually going to be pretty helpful because we are showing a lot of the images and the percentiles of changes in things like body fat, visceral fat, ALMI, FFMI, those sorts of things, by all means, make sure you check out the video of this podcast, which you can find in the show notes page. If you're not a subscriber, you can watch a sneak peek of the video on our YouTube page. So without further delay, I hope you enjoy AMA number 44.
Peter, welcome to another AMA. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, but you look awfully cold.
It is negative degrees right now. It's not good. It's that time of year. I feel like we've got nothing but snow for the past 2 weeks. So it's just a matter of survival at this point. There's nothing you can do. I mean, I know you miss it. And that's kind of why you want to go back to Canada. It's just the weather. So it's fair. But you can always come to Minnesota. You can come live out here.
I think the whole time I was growing up in Canada, I kept wondering, why did people live there prior to the industrial age, like prior to heat and things like that? Like, did it not occur to them that, hey, I could just walk south for a couple of months and I'll be in a place where, yeah, it's hotter in the summer, but like I don't risk dying in the winter anyway.
Well, on that note, we're going to do a little something different for this AMA. We kind of had a little something else planned. And then recently in the past week, you've gotten some labs and DEXA results back and you found them really interesting and we were talking about them internally. So we kind of decided to pull an audible and instead kind of talk through those because I think what we've heard from our audience is whenever we can do case studies and see like real world results and then how people tweak it, they've always found that really helpful. And this time the patient's going to be you. So hopefully it's even more interesting. And on the cold, which we'll get to in a second, I think the rate you're going, you could survive in the cold a lot longer than you maybe could have 10 years ago.
Ouch. Ouch.
Well, I think what we're going to do is we're just going to kind of get into it. It's going to be a little more old school kind of question and answer and going along the way. But I think what would be helpful is a few AMAs ago, a handful probably at this point, we talked about DEXA and we went through kind of how you think about that and then also what you do with patients. And so what you have is you have a spreadsheet of DEXAs that you've done over the past 11 years and kind of how your body has changed throughout that time. And I think what we'll do is we'll use that as an anchor to talk about like the various things and what you've seen from yours, because I know in that time you've done a lot of different things from exercise to nutrition to everything else. And I think it will be a good point to walk through that. So do you want to just share your screen, kind of pull up those
Before decks. I do that, I'll just kind of give a bit of the background. So growing up, when my main thing was boxing, obviously weight, that's a very, very weight-driven sport, especially if you're not a heavyweight, which I was not. I was a middleweight. Every ounce of non-essential tissue you carry into the ring is problematic. So we relied on calipers at that time for body composition. And as anybody who's either had a caliper test done or certainly done one or seen it understands, it's not the most objective standard. And it's highly dependent on the skill of the individual doing the test. That said, a person who really knows what they're doing with calipers is awfully good and pretty accurate. Fast forward to, you know, my 30s, the next time I was paying attention to this sort of thing, that's when I was doing hydrostatic testing. So you would go to places that weighed you while dry and then weighed you underwater under the conditions of full exhalation. And the ratio of those two weights, your buoyant weight versus your not, and the use of Archimedes' principle would basically allow them to deduce how much of your weight was fat. That turned out to be a pretty inaccurate way to go about doing things. Because again, if for no other issue, highly dependent on basically how much air is left in your lungs at the point of exhalation. So I think it was probably 2011, so almost 12 years ago, I sort of switched over to DEXA scanning. And for all intents and purposes, DEXA is the gold standard. And we've talked about what that is, so I'm not going to go into it. But basically, it's a type of X-ray that scans your body that effectively divides tissue into the following buckets very accurately. Bone, fat, other. So the other is mostly muscle, but of course, it's also your organs and things like that. So we look at DEXAs in a number of ways. It's very good at giving total body fat because it's very accurate at measuring fat. So total body fat divided by total body weight is your body fat percentage. And as we've talked about, that's the thing that most people care about when they get a DEXA scan. When our patients get DEXA scans, and we are really adamant that our patients get DEXA scans at least once a year, I think this is a very important thing to be doing. When I run through the results with them, I always say the same thing. Of the four things we're going to talk about today, the least interesting of these is your body fat. The three other things that we talk about are your visceral fat, which is one of the compartments of fat that is outside of the subcutaneous stores. That's the areas where we want to store fat. If we're going to put excess energy away, we want it to be in subcutaneous pockets of fat. As our capacity to store fat there gets stretched, we begin to spill over into other places. We talk about this, and I write about this in the book, as the bathtub. So everybody has sort of a different size bathtub. That's their genetic capacity to store fat in the safe subcutaneous space. The water coming in the bathtub is what you're eating. The water leaving the bathtub through the drain is the energy expenditure. You will either be net accumulating or net losing water in that bathtub. But if you get to the point where you exceed your bathtub's capacity to hold water and you start to spill over, really bad things happen. Nobody likes to have even a small amount of water on their floors and, God forbid, in their drains and heating ducts. And that's what's basically happening when you start to see visceral fat, when you start to see intrahepatic fat, you know, NAFLD is the earliest stage of that, when you start to see peripancreatic fat, perinephric fat, pericardial fat. All of these things are really problematic, highly inflammatory, and effectively what I would call the fourth pillar of disease. So if, for example, if you're talking about ASCVD, we talk a lot about ApoB, blood pressure, smoking. We don't want to forget the inflammatory effect of those fat sources. So that becomes the second thing we care a lot about. Third thing we care a lot about is bone mineral density. So we care about a person's Z-scores and T-scores. Recall from the podcast we did on that, the Z-score is your age, sex, matched BMD for your lumbar spine and your hips. The T-score is comparing you to a 30-year-old. We use the T-score to make the diagnosis of osteopenia. If that's one standard deviation below the mean, or osteoporosis, if you're, I believe, 2.5 standard deviations below the mean. The fourth thing we look at are the metrics, the two metrics of muscle mass, which are ALMI and FFMI, appendicular lean mass index, and fat-free mass index. These are two different methods to triangulate on the same sort of thing, which is basically how much muscle mass do you have for your height. So the ALMI is calculated by looking at the lean mass in your arms and legs in kilograms, dividing that by your height in meter squared. The FFMI takes the total fat-free mass in your body and divides that by your height in meter squared. Obviously, FFMI is a much bigger number than ALMI. The absolute numbers aren't what matters. What matters is where do you show up on the nomogram for your age and your sex. And we want our patients to be north of the 75th percentile for ALMI and FFMI based on the data we've shared previously. Okay, so with all that said, I have kept a spreadsheet for better part of 12 years where I log my DEXA data. And, you know, it'll be interesting to go through some of that now. So again, let me just set the context, because I think what we'll do when we go through this, so people that are just listening to this, I think I'll do my best and Nick, you'll do your best. We'll try to talk about the numbers. But the reality is, this is one of those things where it's probably helpful to be watching a screen when we talk about this stuff. We're going to kind of talk about what was happening in my life at each of these time points. How did things change? Because really, there's a bunch of variables. There's the passage of time, more than a decade. There's many changes in nutrition, from very strict types of diets to fasting to completely unrestricted eating. And then obviously there's dramatic changes in the type of exercise that's been going on there. Those are really the fundamental three changes. Anything else before we jump into this?
One thing I was going to say is I think anyone listening won't be surprised that you keep a spreadsheet of data of like across different health metrics. And it's something that you do beyond just DEXA, but I've heard you talk a lot about it. And I know with patients, internally, you create kind of a trend sheet, which is like, let's do a lot of work to upfront get all their historical labs. So then we can see how does this number compare historically, as opposed to looking at this number isolating. And so as much of a pain as it is for people, whether it's DEXA or even labs, you put a high value in being able to look at something like this, where you can say, let's look at historically, let's monitor changes, as opposed to like, oh, I got a DEXA, I'm just going to look at it this time. I got my blood run, let me look at what it is now and then not focus on everything else, correct?
Yeah, and there are companies that do this kind of stuff. I mean, we kind of build our templates in-house. Later I'll show kind of our in-house template for how we present the data. And then if obviously you just have kind of like a table that records the historical data. So you kind of present the current data in sort of graphical form and then include that along with all the historical data in tabular form so you can see the trends. But yes, I mean, I think, you know, trends matter. You're treating what you see, but you're mindful of the trends. Okay, so let me do a little screen share here and pull up the DEXA data. So what you're looking at here is a relatively straightforward spreadsheet that simply records the data as they've been laid out going back to May of 2011. What's interesting is that was the first DEXA scan I ever had, and I did it the same day that I had a hydrostatic dunk test. So I had been maybe every year doing a hydrostatic dunk test. And on that particular day, and maybe it was the day before, but it was pretty, I think it was the same day, I had a hydrostatic dunk test and it said something like 16% body fat. And I was like, well, I sure don't look like I'm 16% body fat. And then I decided to go and splurge for the DEXA because at the time, and there probably is still a significant difference in price. So I went and had the DEXA scan and it was like, no, you're actually 9.3%, which was kind of more in line with what I felt like I was. And that was basically the last time I ever did a hydrostatic test. Now, why again was there such a discordance between them? I don't know. Maybe I'm someone who can't get a lot of air out of his lungs and therefore wasn't giving a good enough underwater weight relative to above water weight. But regardless, that's where I was, call it 12 years ago. So as you can see, just to orient you to the columns, body weight at the time was just under 180 pounds. And then what's being spit out is what the DEXA scan is really good at telling you. It's able to tell you how much lean mass you have. So that's basically muscle and organs, call it 156 pounds. How much fat mass? 16.8 pounds. The mass of bone mineral content, 7 pounds. And then fat-free mass, which as you can see is just the sum of lean mass and bone mineral content, 163 pounds. So body fat is calculated at 9.3%. Now, Unfortunately, this was back when I lived in San Diego, and I was doing these at San Diego State University or something, and they just didn't have the software at the time. They weren't spitting out VAT, so I don't have VAT recordings. Furthermore, they probably gave segmental information on their reports, but I wasn't paying attention to it. So when I, you know, a couple of years ago started paying attention to ALMI and FFMI, didn't have the data. I even called them up and they didn't have the reports. So back then, all I could tell you was what my fat mass index was. And again, I don't really pay that much attention to that metric, but I do record it. And what my fat free mass index was, and we'll talk about that. But I don't have ALMI until 2014. Okay, so what can I say looking at those numbers? So a body fat of 9%, and I would have been 38 years old. So I'm going to pull up my table of what that is. So that's low, right? That's sort of below the third percentile. So that's really lean. And for an FFMI of 23.4 at that age, it's above the 97th percentile. That's the highest line on the nomogram. So what was I doing at the time? I guess that's the more important question. So that's back in an era where I was swimming a lot, and that was kind of my main thing, like pool swimming. I was kind of done with open water marathon swimming. I was lifting weights like crazy and doing a little bit of cycling as kind of cross training. And I was on a carb restricted diet, but not a ketogenic diet. So this was right before I started a ketogenic diet. In fact, this is the month I went on a ketogenic diet, was May of 2011. So I was pretty carb restricted for a year before that. Okay, so fast forward to the end of that summer, I'm now, I don't know, whatever, 2-3 months into a ketogenic diet. I go and repeat the test. I've lost weight. So I've gone from, you know, 180 pounds down to, call it 172 and a half pounds, lost about 7 pounds. Some of that is lean. So let's say I went from 156 down to 152 and a half. So lost about 3.5 pounds of muscle, but lost about 4 pounds of fat. BMC doesn't change. And so body fat's actually gone down a little bit to 7.5%, but also my fat-free mass index has gone down a little bit to 23%. Obviously still plenty high. Just for reference, at that age, my goal would be to make sure that my fat-free mass index is above about 19. That would be kind of the 75th percentile.
Real quick, that's the 75th percentile for FFMI is what you want your patients at, above 75% or above.
Yeah. When there's discordance between the ALMI and the FFMI, we tend to prefer the ALMI because it's, we actually have more data for ALMI. It's also a slightly more pure measurement. Why? Because in your limbs, you really only have muscle, fat, and bone. So the ALMI truly tells you about what its name suggests, the appendicular lean mass index. It is the index of muscle mass in arms and legs. The fat-free mass index, I guess I need to be a little more clear, is also true to its name, but the reality of it is somewhat confounded by the organs. So while we do that, because it includes the musculature of the torso and things like that, you'll sometimes see percentile discordance. And in fact, you see that in me. We'll see that when we get to more recent data, that I'm slightly discordant between those two. My FFMI tends to represent me at a higher percentile than my ALMI, probably because I just have scrawny little arms. Okay, so as we march through 2011, 2012, and 2014, so you can see all of those tests, those are all my keto days. So what am I doing during this period of time? Well, from 2011 to 2012, I now transition into cycling. So you see this change in my exercise where I am now spending just as much time exercising, but now it's on a bike, maybe even slightly more time. So I'm still, you know, lifting weights, but not quite as much. But I'm on a bike 5 days a week. Two of those days are really, really long days, Saturday, Sunday. And then there's 3 weekdays where they're probably still 90 minutes to 2 hours. I'm still on a ketogenic diet. And again, I've talked about that a lot, probably documented that. I'm sure I've written about it someplace. Not really experiencing any downside of a ketogenic diet other than, you know, the restriction that obviously comes from it. And you can see at one point, this isn't my lowest weight. My lowest weight was about 164 pounds, but my lowest weight captured on a DEXA was in October of 2012, and that was 167.5 pounds. Now, by that point, my lean mass was down to about 145 pounds. So that's, you know, like 11 pounds less than the initial test in May of 2011. My body fat percent was like, 9.5%. And my ALMI, we're still not calculating that, but my FFMI is still about 22. So again, as I talked about, I sort of decided at the end of, or the middle of 2014, that summer, that I was just kind of done with a ketogenic diet. I think all my metrics of health were really good. Blood markers were great. My performance was great. It takes a while to adapt. I want to be really clear. It took 3 months to just even get over the cliff of, maybe get over the hump, I should say, of feeling kind of miserable when I exercised. And I would say it took me 18 months to get to the point where I couldn't distinguish between being on and off carbohydrates. But there's no question that it's just a very restrictive way to eat. And so in the middle of 2014 is when I started to experiment with fasting.
Real quick, when you were on the ketogenic diet, do you have an idea of how much protein you are having during that time compared to now? Because I know you talk so much about protein being so important and seeing your lean mass drop like 11 pounds from May of 2011 to February of 2014, it actually dropped 6 pounds. Were you getting as much protein as you are now, you think?
Thank you for listening to today's sneak peek AMA episode of The Drive. If you're interested in hearing the complete version of this AMA, you'll want to become a member. We created the membership program to bring you more in-depth exclusive content without relying on paid ads. Membership benefits are many, and beyond the complete episodes of the AMA each month, they include the following. Ridiculously comprehensive podcast show notes that detail every topic, paper, person, and thing we discuss on each episode of The Drive. Access to our private podcast feed. The Qualies, which are a super short podcast, typically less than 5 minutes, released every Tuesday through Friday, which highlight the best questions, topics, and tactics discussed on previous episodes of The Drive. This is particularly important for those of you who haven't heard all of the back episodes. It becomes a great way to go back and filter and decide which ones you want to listen to in detail. Really steep discount codes for products I use and believe in, but for which I don't get paid to endorse. And benefits that we continue to add over time. If you want to learn more and access these member-only benefits, head over to peteratiamd.com/subscribe. Lastly, if you're already a member, but you're hearing this, it means you haven't downloaded our member-only podcast feed where you can get the full access to the AMA and you don't have to listen to this. You can download that at peteratiamd.com/members. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, all with the ID Peter Attia MD. You can also leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast player you listen on. This podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice from any medical condition they have, and they should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, I take conflicts of interest very seriously. For all of my disclosures and the companies I invest in or advise, please visit peteratiamd.com/about, where I keep an up-to-date and active list of such companies.